Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Summit.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jacksonville!
Jaguars Monday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Carrie Limousine, Community First Credit Union, Ticket Exchange, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank.
Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith
begins right now.
And we welcome you into the first regular season installment, first post-game regular season installment of Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Sutter. I'm Cole Pemper here, along with the senior editor of Jaguars.com, Vic Ketchman.
Hello,
Cole. Good evening, Vic. And the Jaguars general manager, the general manager of the first place Jacksonville Jaguars. Just try that on for size for now. Gene Smith. Gene, how are you?
It's great to be here, Cole.
And congratulations on the win. It's been a while since being able to start the season 1-0. People say it's one game, but boy, it's you start 1-0, things feel a whole lot better than 0-1, don't they?
They sure do, and certainly for our football team, I think the confidence that you can take from a win like this, because it did go back and forth, I think is something that can certainly be a platform for what we can do hopefully this weekend.
How much trouble did you have not smiling, trying not to smile today? Look at him smile. I mean, you want me to tell you what kind of day he had yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he had a day. You had a day general manager's dream off. All right, let's talk about the acquisitions. Let's just stick with this year's acquisitions. I'm even going to go to Eugene Monroe and Evan Britton, who dominated their guys, right?
Our whole offensive line played well.
Okay. Let's start with Justin Smiley.
All right.
Okay. By the way, what did you trade for him?
A conditional. Seventh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He played pretty well yesterday, didn't he?
He did a nice job. He had the one holding call, which was a 50-50 call. And then the other one, he was a little eager on a pull. But overall, he did an outstanding job.
Okay. Tyson Alualu.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Campman.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Hart played better than people might think. I saw him in some stunts that he created havoc in there. Kirk Morrison, David Jones comes out of nowhere.
Who's been here for 20 minutes and suddenly he's thrust into the game.
William Middleton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not forget about these guys. That's another guy that pulled off the waiver wire early last season. Now he's turned into a player. By the way, he unfortunately had his half sack stripped. They gave it to Terrence Knight. Oh, there's another one. That was from last year. Let's see, who else? Kasim Osgood. Game-winning touchdown pass, makes a big swat back on the goal line of a punt, downs the punt. Let's see, who else? Considine. You know, there's a guy, if you could give him one more step, you really got something. Because he's naturally smart, naturally tough, naturally instinctive. He's just not naturally fast. Has a little trouble getting over to the sideline on that over-the-top coverage on the deep ball. Hey, I know another guy did, and he ran real well. But on all the other stuff, he's up there whacking people. He's up there tipping balls. Last year, he started the season, Gene, did he not, at strong safety and Reggie Nelson at free?
Well, he's played both positions.
But did he not start at strong safety in Indianapolis a year ago?
I believe so.
He's not a strong safety, is he? He's a free.
Yeah, he's more of a free safety. You'd like for your safeties to be able to play left and right with all the formation adjustments, you know, with motions and shifts and so forth. But some guys play better in a free safety position. Some guys tend to play better in a strong safety position. So I think he's found a home.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think you got your free safety. And with that, I will turn this over to Gene Smith, for whom this show is named. Give us your bent on yesterday.
Well, it was encouraging. Like I said, with the offensive line, they did a good job of keeping David clean. And I think everybody saw what David could do when he gets an opportunity to set his feet to throw. Certainly the offensive line can play better, so I don't want to say that they've played their best. I'm certain they would tell you that there's some plays that they left out on the field that they could have done better. I think offensively, certainly I talked about David, I talked about the offensive line, but Mercedes Lewis really did a nice job. You know, two touchdown catches. You know, Maurice ran hard. He had 98 yards, and, you know, he's a top competitor. And then the few snaps that Jennings got in, he did a nice job, and certainly Greg Jones blocking. And then Mike Thomas is a playmaker. He made a couple outstanding catches yesterday. When the ball is in the air, Mike's selfish. You know, every ball's his. And so I thought overall we had a number of different guys step up during the course of the game, and I was really proud of what we did offensively. Then on the defensive side, we rotated some defensive linemen in there. Certainly Campman made his presence felt, and Tyson played hard the whole game. You know, Denver did a good job of doubling our tackles inside. And so we had some more opportunities, I guess, on the edges than maybe we did inside at times. But, you know, we created some pressure off a four-man rush. Certainly Darryl Smith, I thought, played exceptionally well. Rasheen Mathis did a nice job against the pass, against the run. And then you mentioned Sean Considine. But we had a number of guys step up and make some plays, not just on offense and defense, but even in the kicking game. You know, Kasim Osgood made some plays. Montel Owens was a force. Tyron Brackenridge was a force. Russell Allen was a force. And then Pod did a nice job with the 56-yarder. I think he was 40.3 net on the day. Did a good job holding. I thought, other than probably one kickoff, Scobie did a tremendous job getting that ball out there to enable us to get good field position with our kick coverage. So, I don't know. I thought overall you could call it a total team effort.
Breckridge, by the way, is another one of your guys. But I want to talk about Derek Cox. It's the lone negative. The kid is struggling. He struggled through the preseason. Now let me tell you about post-game interview that I had with him and a couple other writers. He talked about his foot injury of the summer, and when we asked him, well, what do you need to do better? What needs to get fixed? And he said his footwork, which I took as a signal. I took that to mean, you know, I got a foot injury, and my footwork's got to get better. So put two and two together here, guys. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I got a feeling he's still trying to recover from that foot injury. If you would talk about Cox, what are you guys going to do there? He had to be replaced yesterday. Do you replace him in the starting lineup, or do you continue to work? What happened?
Well, I trust the coach's judgment. I think we have a situation now where we have real competition at corner. And, you know, David came in and did a nice job in the limited snaps that he had. We certainly don't give up on guys around here, especially a young player that showed consistency through, the season a year ago. He did have a foot, in preseason that he played through. Certainly a couple of the plays, there were some technique flaws. I guess a lot of times on defense they call them eye violations. So I would be more concerned if they were physical limitations. He has certainly shown the ability to play out wide in a very challenging position. And I feel like he'll continue to develop. He's just struggling a little bit right now for whatever reason, and he's got to maintain his confidence because he has done it in this league at a winning level, and I'm confident he can still do it this year. It's just for whatever reason, I don't know if I can put my finger on any one thing, he has not played the level of what he's capable of.
All right, there's some words from the general manager, Gene Smith, on the Jaguars' season-opening 24-17 victory over the Denver Broncos. I want to remind everybody that when the Jaguars win, we all win. And since the Jaguars won yesterday, get out your ticket stubs today and tomorrow. Free barbecue pork sandwich with your ticket stub at any participating Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue restaurants. Just keep winning, and we'll be fat and happy by the time things are all said and done. Also, we'll come back with an injury update for you as well, and You can make some comments as well if you want to jump on Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Also, when we come back, what does a win on opening day mean? I'll tell you what it has traditionally meant for the Jaguars. Give you some numbers there. Straight ahead on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Suddeth, right here on Jaguars Radio.
He's at the 10, the 5, and he reaches for the end zone. He got it. Touchdown, Mercedes Lewis. Touchdown, Jaguars. Throws, he's got a man, and it's caught. Mercedes Lewis, touchdown number 2. Okay, the first defender, the 24 of the Broncos, back to throw. Has time in the pocket, steps, turns, and delivers a pass, and this is caught. Kasim Osgood, touchdown, Jacksonville.
What a catch by Kasim Osgood.
Some of the highlights from yesterday's 24-17 Jaguars season-opening victory over the Denver Broncos. Welcome back, Jaguars Monday, with Gene Smith, presented by Suddeth, along with the senior editor, Vic Ketchman. I'm Cole Pemper. All right, what does a season-opening win mean for the Jaguars? This is some simple math, but I went back and looked at what has happened when the Jaguars have won on opening day and when they have not. In the years in which they have won on opening day, Jaguars average almost 10 wins. In seasons that has been a season-opening loss, 6 wins. So you talk about getting off to a fast start. It's tough to do that without winning the first one.
In the 6 years that they've made the playoffs, they won the opener 5 times.
Exactly. That was my other stat there. And, of course, this is the first opening day win since 2006. So, I mean, you look at all the numbers, and yes, of course, everybody would like to win to get things started, but that kind of underlines, Gene, how big a game the first game can be for you.
No question. And, the thing to me that I was very pleased with, and I'm sure the coaching staff was, is on offense and defense, we did not have the 11 starters together at any one time in the preseason. So I really believe as we continue to play together, that continuity that helps you win, in the tough ball games throughout the year, that's one area we'll definitely improve in.
How good is Denver? How good a gauge is it? Everybody puts so much into the first game because that's all we have. We start extrapolating. Denver was a team that kind of had a similar season as the Jaguars did last year. Is that a good gauge of where the Jaguars are?
Well, I think it was a good test. Certainly, the quarterback's a real NFL starter. They have a good core of receivers. The running back's a good young player. I think where we created some mismatches was up front on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And then certainly, D.J. Williams is a linebacker with speed. But their secondary is really the strength on the defensive side of the ball. They lost Doomerville for the year, and certainly he's one of the better pass rushers in the league as of late. And, I just think overall, in the end, you win the game in the trenches, and that's where I think we got a competitive advantage yesterday.
Is that what happened to Mike Sims-Walker? Champ Bailey took him out of the game?
Well, they got a couple guys who have some cover ability, Goodman and Bailey. And then they got a guy that probably against the run and pass still might be the best safety in football when you combine both things. Here's Brian Dawkins, a future Hall of Famer, I think, who's 36 and played like he was 26 yesterday.
Wow. He was all over
the
place.
Yeah, he's one heck of a player. I know what Philadelphia was doing. They were ready to move on. But I think as it turned out, Macho Harris never made their team. So, I mean, wasn't he the guy that was supposed to replace Brian Dawkins?
Well, they've had a couple different guys try to replace Brian Dawkins. And the thing about him, here's a guy that was playing at a high level in his mid-30s who did not lose a step, and that's rare.
Yeah,
usually as you get older, a safety can still play with their mind, because obviously a guy like him, he's always been able to run, but he really hasn't lost a step compared to when he came in the league. He might not be quite as fast, but with a good mind, he certainly was active in a run and against the pass.
I can't help it. I got to go there. I'm absolutely flabbergasted by Denver's first-round draft picks. Because right away you talked about having an established pro quarterback and a good core of receivers, and where the game was won for the Jaguars was in the trenches. So in the first round, Belaga was available, and Anthony Davis was available, and Iapati was available, and Marcus Pouncey was available. And they draft a quarterback and a wide receiver. I'm still lost. I don't get it. Would those guys have been at the top of their board? Do you have any explanation what they were doing?
Well, no, I don't. Certainly.
It's hard to believe that Brian Belaga was below those two guys, Demaryius Thomas and, of course, Tim Tebow.
Well, again, not every draft board is the same around the league. The thing about Orton, people may not think he's an elite quarterback, but he made some outstanding throws, and I thought he played well. And he's played well, really, since he's been in the league. It's just a lot of it's who's playing around you. He was a guy that was accurate in college. He certainly got an NFL starter skill set. And I think he showed certainly enough arm strength and then at times outstanding ball placement. And we had in a couple situations a guy in excellent coverage, and he beat our coverage with his ball placement.
He's so, Drew Brees without mobility. I mean, he, same college, same system. What was the guy's name from Wyoming?
That Joe
was
Tiller.
Joe Tiller. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe Tiller knows quarterback play. And he may throw the best back shoulder fade I've ever seen. He threw it over and over yesterday, poor Derek Cox. I mean, he was just throwing the same back shoulder fade. It's just beautiful.
He really did. And, you know, Rasheen had as good a coverage as you could have on a receiver a couple times yesterday. And, you know, again, good quarterbacks can beat you with the throw as good as your coverage can be sometimes. The only way to stop them, I guess, is a pass interference call. But, you know, I take my hat off to them. I mean, they did a good job coming in here and competing in the heat, and certainly the quarterback play did not hold them back yesterday.
How much of a factor was the heat, do you think?
Well, I think with the rain and then the break in action, I think it probably helped them out some. Mm-hmm. They had a couple players that were going in and out of the game. And you could tell on the sideline, because certainly up in the box I have my binoculars and I'm tracking what's going on between the plays and things you can't necessarily see on tape at times. But, you know, I thought that, you know, our guys did a good job with it. Obviously we practice in it, but when you get in a game day situation where the intensity is cranked up and things are on the line, adrenaline starts flowing, and I thought they handled it well.
As it turns out, I think they made a good-looking deal with Cutler, you know, the Cutler trade. They got rid of a guy whose character they didn't like, and they got a good quarterback and picks. But they didn't do anything with the picks.
No, they did. They did wind up drafting a couple of offensive linemen later in the draft.
That's not
right?
Where the picks
one of them,
were.
I'd say one of them. I know. Well, they maneuvered quite a bit in that draft, though, Vic. I mean, they were moving up and down all over in that, you know, those first couple of rounds. And they started a couple of those guys yesterday. Beatles, in particular, was a guy they had started tackle. So they did draft some big bodies. They drafted a defensive lineman as well. I don't totally disagree with your point on this about. And in fact, there was an article in the Denver Post today, a column about it looks like he drafted for the future and he may not get to his future.
Oh yeah, that guy's story. I read that story in the Times Union. The what was his name? Kissler.
Mark Kissler. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very good story. I mean, he really has his finger on the pulse of the Broncos.
All right, let's get an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Relatively injury-free first game. We did see Anthony Smith come out of the ball game. At one point, Jack Del Rio indicated today shouldn't be a big issue. Felt very confident in the ability for him to get back in there. So health always a big part of things as you go through. We're going to talk about David Garrard a little bit when we come back. And in particular, the kind of answering the bell that Garrard showed, I think, in that first game. Also, a little quiz for maybe for both Vic and Gene, and for you as well. Test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the new 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta, only at your local Southern Ford dealers. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Suddeth, right here on Jaguars Radio.
Kick
takes the snap, drops the throw. Pressure coming up the middle. He's got a turn, and he's going to get hit and sacked. Down he goes. All the way back at the 36-yard line. Aaron Kempman gets his first sack as a Jaguar. Three-man rush. Horton with time steps to avoid. He's going to get hit and sacked. And Tyson Alualu has his first NFL sack. Pressure coming. Horton plants, turns. He's going to get hit and sacked. And Aaron Kempman was there.
That's the third sack of the game for the Jaguars defensive front.
After having 14 sacks last year, immediate dividends on that defensive line with the Jaguars D getting it done. 24-17 the final. Jaguars beat the Denver Broncos yesterday in the season opener. Season ticket holders, use your Jaguars rewards card when you purchase at least 10 gallons of Gate gasoline and get $2 in Jag Bucks. For details, go to Jaguars.com. And you can visit Sports Mania today for your chance to win the ultimate Jaguars game day experience. That includes a limo ride, club seats, and a Sky Lounge tailgate party passes for the Jaguars-Colts game. Register for free at your closest Sports Mania location in Jacksonville. Congratulations to Mary and Robert Paulinski, who won the Sports Mania Ultimate Jaguars Game Day experience last week. And you can continue to register. Ticketing update for you, by the way. As of this morning, about 2,900 tickets remain to get to the blackout number for the Eagles game week after next, which was about the same spot I believe we were for the Broncos game a couple of weeks in advance. So we'll see how things go there, but I want to keep everybody updated as far as that's concerned. Again, we can you can find your way through on Facebook to post a question or comment. A couple of folks have done that. We'll get to those in just a moment. I teased talking about David Garrard. Yesterday, his numbers, 138.9, the third highest quarterback rating in a single game in Jaguars history. Do you guys know who the other two? I think, Vic, I think you and I might have talked with Gene. Do you know who the other two are, two highest? See if you remember these games. Mark Brunell against Dallas in 2000.
I don't remember that one.
I didn't remember that game in particular. His quarterback rating that game was 146.4. And then Rob Johnson against Baltimore, the game that
got him $25 million in the Jaguars, Fred Taylor.
Yeah, that was a big game for Rob, a 145.5
and
quarterback
Tavian
rating.
And Tavian Banks, I
may add. Yep. And David's quarterback rating, 138.9, was the third best of all time. And this coming on the heels of an offseason where, you know, he was definitely called out several times. And I talk about the character of how he handled all that and has come out and started the season very strong.
Well, he certainly didn't have an offseason. You know, I call it the out of season, but David did some tremendous things. And I know his teammates saw the approach that he took this offseason to take his game to another level. And I saw in the preseason, and I think a lot of other people did too, that he was getting the ball out quicker. He was more decisive with his throws. And David's been one person that's always respected the football. And, you know, I take my hat off to him. He's highly competitive. The game is important to him. And he's a good teammate. And I really believe people are starting to appreciate who he is and what he stands for. And I feel like he'll have an outstanding season.
A play he didn't make yesterday really impressed me. It was late in the game. Was it that delicate part of the game where you're trying to kill the clock, but you don't want to pull the plug? He had a third and six, and he dropped back to pass. And I'm sure he's looking for a wide open receiver here. But if you don't get a guy wide open, you know, don't put it in the air. And he didn't. He tucked it under and ran for 3 yards and sat down and, okay, pod, kick it away and let's turn it over to the defense. I don't want to make too much of this because, you know, I may be over dramatizing it, but he showed a kind of restraint that I think a veteran quarterback has to show.
I agree with that. You know, David certainly will tell you there's some things he could have done better in the game. You know, the one sack, it's a little bit of a coverage sack. David had an opportunity to let it go to mm-hmm. Quan Underwood. The one thing Taquan did yesterday, he got on top of their corners. I mean, he can legitimately run. And I know as the season goes on, you know, David will get more opportunities to take some shots down the field. And I just thought overall he did a good job of playing the game from the neck up yesterday.
And one of the Facebook posts here, Gene, talking about Taquan Underwood, and not so much in the receiving situation, but as a return man, did a very good job in the return. It seems like everybody who drops back to return kickoffs here in the preseason, the regular season, does a nice job. And the question is he going to get more looks based on what he did in the return game yesterday?
I think he will. He's done some kickoff returns in the past. I think you can see what speed will do. Mm-hmm. We have a number of guys, punting kick returners, that have legitimate speed. And I think our people on the return units are excited to block for them. They know if they sustain a block and, you know, they see the back of that returner's jersey, they've done their job. And I think a lot of it, too, starts with Kasim and Montel. I mean, they're two temple centers, not just covering kicks, but on returns as blockers. And so I think overall, again, it's a lot of people working well together.
Any thoughts on San Diego? They play tonight. We won't see that one, will we? Oh, no, that's right. It's a doubleheader. 10-15. We won't
Vic
see
won't
that
see
one.
They'll be asleep.
Any thoughts on them?
Well, certainly they got a quarterback, so mm-hmm. we're going to see another quarterback that's highly competitive and accurate. And I think he does a good job of leading their football team. I'd like to think, you know, that this will be another test that our guys will rise up to the challenge. You know, they do like to run the football still. And defensively, they can certainly create some problems like most defenses in the NFL. When you have more time to prepare at this level, people can get more creative. But I feel like, again, the more our starters play together, the better we'll be as a team.
How about the West Coast thing? It didn't go so well last year on the West Coast, Seattle and San Francisco. Do you attach any validity to that, any relevance to that, or was that just something that we drummed up as media because to match the result?
You know, I don't know what it is. I know we're going out there to get a win, and you're talking about a guy who played Division III football. We had a four-hour rule. If it was under 4 hours, we busted the day of and jumped off the bus and played. So I don't know if going in early really matters. I think the mindset is what matters, and I really feel like the mindset that this team has certainly will take the approach it takes to win.
It's interesting, too, when you hear things said in the locker room, in interviews, press conferences, all throughout the offseason, and OTAs and training camp. We saw a lot of those things that were being said or being claimed by coaches and players kind of come out in the game yesterday, and which must be very gratifying for you to see that all these things, that, you know, being tougher against this, being better against, whether it's something specific like rushing the passer better, or whether it's something a little more esoteric like, being able to respond to adversity, that all happened yesterday.
Well, there's a lot of things that came together yesterday, and certainly we're going to have some tough games throughout the year, but, you know, two of the things beyond talent, I think, are awareness and competitiveness. Those are two areas to me that showed up yesterday on the plus side.
Let me ask you, do we have time?
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to go to wide receiver as it pertains to Jarrett Dillard going on injured reserve. What are you going to do there? You could go out and get Ernest Wolford, who is a tight end slash wide receiver, or you could go get Troy Williamson, or you could go get somebody else from somebody else's waiver wire, or Stan Pat. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, we'll continue to evaluate the position, but I think the best option is try to get the best available player. So I don't want to hone in on just one position.
Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing out names.
Yeah. Well, you got a little scout in you.
Well, you know.
Let him out. Will you let that little scout out?
Gee shucks.
While Vic tries to stop blushing, we'll remind you that Jaguars fans can check the fan zone section of Jaguars.com and see how you can win Jaguars tickets and some great Jaguars merchandise. Just look for the list of participating Parts House Car Care Centers, the Parts House official sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Vote for your favorite MVP teacher to be a Community First Credit Union MVP Teacher of the Week. Your teacher can win club seats to a Jaguars home game. It's all part of First Down Touchdowns for Teachers. Visit communityfirstfl.org for the details. Also, when we come back, get some thoughts on what happened around the league in the first week, including the Colts losing and a highly controversial play that really wound up costing Detroit a win. We'll talk about that and some of the debuts for some of the rookies as well. It's all straight ahead here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Sutton, here on Jaguars Radio.
Second and 10, 36-yard line, line of scrimmage, 53 seconds to play. Horton takes the snap, has time in the pocket, step down, is going to get hit, but turns and throws, and this one's intercepted! Darryl Smith's got it! This one is over! He goes down at the 50-yard line, and the Jaguars are going to get their first win of the season.
There was the game clincher, the interception by Darryl Smith yesterday in a 24-17 Jaguars victory over the Denver Broncos. Folks, before the game, enjoyed Teal Town, which is 3 hours prior to every Jaguars home game. Check out Teal Town with live bands, a huge LED screen, interactive games, football drills, and specially discounted concessions, including $2 draft beers. Admission is free with no game ticket required. Teal Town, just south of the Pepsi Plaza at Everbank Field. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Sutteth here as we take you up to the top of the hour. A couple of interesting things around the league, I thought, Gene. First of all, certainly got everybody's attention in the AFC South that Houston was not just able to beat Indy for just the second time in franchise history, but the way they did it. Arian Foster, who was an undrafted player last year, goes for 231 yards on the ground to set a Houston record. Certainly has got to get your attention, and after what happened in the preseason with Indy's defense, maybe you start looking at it and you say, all right, well, yeah, it was a preseason game. You have to start seeing how things play out, I think.
Well, it was a good win for the Texans, and the formula to that victory was very similar to what we've done in our successful games against the Colts. I really feel like Indianapolis will regroup, and you know, that was probably a wake-up call for him, for sure. But the Houston Texans had them, you know, obviously highlighted on that schedule, and we're ready to play Sunday.
I got to tell you, I'm not so sure the Colts will rebound. If you would get the schedule for the next few weeks, I know they have to make a trip either in week two or week three, I think it is, to Denver. Denver will match up very well against them because they've got the secondary to take them on. They've got a running back, Marino, I think can do what this guy. I mean, when did the Texans ever mow anybody down with the running game, right? I mean, if they can do it, anybody can do it. I think playing in Denver in week three, right?
Week three at Dion. Next week they'll play the Giants at home.
Uh-huh.
And then that's a Sunday night game. Then they go to Denver.
And then
come to Jacksonville.
Oh!
Running game.
I'm telling you, I think you could have a shot, Gene. I think this team could have a shot to put the death blow on them.
Well, I guess I give Peyton Manning and their skill athletes on offense a lot of credit. They can score points in a hurry. And obviously they got some things that they got to take care of before this weekend. But I feel like they've had too much success there that they can do some things to overcome, you know, a game like the Texan game. So we'll see what happens. You know, I still have confidence in what they can do for sure.
Okay. Elsewhere in the division, Titans beat the Raiders 38-13. Vince Young was 13 of 17, 154 yards, two touchdowns. Chris Johnson, just another day at the office, 142 yards.
Including a 76-yard touchdown run. He's great back.
Just terrific. Yeah. And again, so you got three 1-0 teams and then the Colts in the division. I did want to get your thoughts on the controversial play of the weekend, which was a would-be game-winning or go-ahead touchdown catch by Calvin Johnson in the game between Chicago and Detroit, where he caught the ball, kind of went down on his knees as he caught it, and then didn't make, I guess, a football move. Is that the reason? The ball bounced out of his hand after he kind of hit it on the ground. Was clearly, I mean, if you were just to look at it without any sort of context of the rule, you go, yeah, that's a touchdown. I'm sure you've seen the play by now. What do you think?
Well, I saw the play on a TV highlight. Mm-hmm. I actually want to research that more with the league. Because I think most people that saw that play clearly thought it was a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And
So he said the right call was made.
That's correct.
And I think the right call was made. I guess the point is on that rule. And, you know, Jack's comment today was that common sense is sometimes missing in the league.
Do you remember the Troy Polamalu interception in the playoff game in Indianapolis? And then he goes down and the ball comes out. And it was the interception was overturned by replay, and then Tagliabue, I ripped the official. You know, where is your head on this? You shouldn't have done that. You know, I think with the league, in fact, I know what the league wanted to do with this "don't touch the ground" thing is they wanted to make it absolutely crystal clear. You know, you can't touch the ball to the ground in the act of making a catch. In other words, this is black and white now. We're going to take the interpretation out of this thing. You know,
you know what it reminded me of, though? It reminded me of Dustin Johnson in the PGA Championship, where you had a rule that may have been the rule, but did it, you know, there has to be some ability to be
able
to.
And Dustin Johnson did not know. He didn't read the flyer that they sent out that gave all the golfers that week. Here, read this. And he just threw it away and didn't read it, okay? And that's what I'm wondering on Calvin Johnson. Hey, it's the player's responsibility. Well, first it's the coach's responsibility to make sure the players know the rules. I didn't know or I forgot is not an excuse. Mm-hmm. You've got to know that the ball can't touch the ground, therefore you must keep it elevated above the ground. That was his responsibility to know that rule.
What do you think of that whole situation, Gene?
Well, like I said, I want to research it more. I think to most people, they didn't see it as a 50-50 call. They saw it as the wrong call, but, you know, the league did make a statement that it was the correct call.
I mean, he caught the ball. He was changing hands. I mean, he demonstrated possession the whole bit. But the league has gone out of its way to make it clear the ball can't touch the ground, period.
It'd be interesting to see if that's something that's addressed in the
it's like the Tampa Bay St. Louis NFC title game some years ago when Tony Dungy was coaching the Bucks and St. Louis went to the Super Bowl and won. Mm-hmm. You remember the play, the pass, and the guy came down on the ground and the ball came loose and
Bert Emanuel.
Yeah, it caused a rules change. Mm-hmm. You know, well, this is the same thing. I don't know if it was the Polamalu play or what. I think there have been several since then.
Yeah, well, in these situations, the league is often reactive rather than proactive in these things, and that's sort of how the way they change. I do want to get a couple other notes in here on some of the debuts for some of the rookies. Sam Bradford, the number one pick, 32 of 55. That's a record for a debut of most attempts and completions. 253 yards, a touchdown, and three interceptions for the Rams. And Ndamukong Suh had a sack in his first game. And C.J. Spiller, who was tearing things up in the league in the preseason, seven carries, 6 yards, four catches, 8 yards, one kickoff return, 11 yards.
He'll be all right.
Thoughts on the rookies at all? I don't want to pin you into a corner to talk about somebody else's players.
You like Spiller, right?
Yeah, it's too early to tell on some of these guys. I just wanted to say one more thing on the rules. You know, what if we still have the forced out on the catches in play?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a play there on fourth down that...
on the Brandon Lloyd down here in the end zone. Oh, yeah.
I mean, the league does look at things. And
that could have been a game tire. Yeah. Very good, Gene.
And there was a play earlier, in fact, where Rasheen was on the sideline with a guy that wound up being, a third down conversion that was nullified. So... these things.
We tend not to see things we don't want to see. I remember them.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, Gene, thanks a lot. Vic, thank you. For Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper reminding you that tomorrow night, the Jack Del Rio Show. Then on Wednesday night, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Our broadcast on Sunday begins at 1 o'clock with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show before the Jaguars take on the San Diego Chargers, looking to go 2-0 and off to the right start. Have a great evening and a great week, everybody.